The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Start pouring in.
The most thrilling, gobsmacking last day of the regular season any of us can remember. We didn't get the tie, Gami. We were close, but three teams won in overtime to make the playoffs. Bananas. Also, hold on to your butts. The national title preview. Let's go. I've got a
greatest week 18 in NFL history.
First week 18, you ready?
Never remember a week 18.
It's driving me out of my mind. That's why it's hard for me to find. Can't get it out of my head. National title preview. It's rat poison.
Chargers call a timeout. How did that shift the strategy?
Yeah, it definitely did, obviously. But we knew no matter what, we didn't want to tie. We wanted to win the football game.
We ran the ball there, and they didn't call a timeout. So I think they were probably thinking the same thing, you know, and then we had the big run to there. And when we got the big run, it got us what we thought was advantageous field goal position for us. We were going to take the field goal and try to win it.
I don't think it changed their mindset because they were going to run the ball on the play before, and then they ran the ball the very next play.
What you believe, what you choose to believe, what you think happened the last minute of overtime. There's going to be some lip reading here as well. You guys, I love you lip reading. You have no idea. You're on your couch. But yeah, sure, I get an opinion of what's going on here. With the tie on the table, both teams advancing to the playoff scenario was in play. Then the Staley timeout, the Raiders running the ball so well, and then the field goal and all the drama after the game. Frank Isola, around the horn to you. What happened, and did Brandon Staley's timeout change history here?
That was a great game, and then clearly in the final 2 minutes when the Raiders knew that they had control of the game and that they were going to make the playoffs if they just killed the game, that's what they intended to do. Why are you calling a timeout with 5 seconds left on the play clock? That doesn't mean that they wouldn't have gotten the first down anyway, but the rhythm of the game suggested they're probably going to get stopped there. They were going to attempt a long field goal. There's a very good chance they missed that, and the Chargers are in the playoffs. There's no reason at that moment to call timeout. You would just stop them on the first and second down. That was a bad move by Brandon Staley.
Oh, you think the timeout lost the Chargers the season here? You think the Raiders were going to...
I don't think it helped. I don't think it helped. And that's what you're trying to call timeout there. It did not help. Why stop it? The Raiders were ready to basically kill the game. They were basically ready to say, it's over. We don't care about you. We're in the playoffs with a tie.
Sarah Spain, how do you see it?
No, because the Raiders didn't want to play KC and KC. What he was saying there, Passaccia, was when we weren't able to complete runs that advanced the ball, we were concerned about the depth of the field goal, and we didn't want to run the risk of missing it short and having the ball returned on us and losing the game. When we were able to advance the ball far enough that the field goal seemed within reach, then we elected to pursue the victory instead of considering the tie. It had nothing to do with the timeout, which would have been taken earlier in the play clock and would have been taken earlier in the game clock if they had wanted to preserve the opportunity to win. It was too late. They had already wasted all that time. They wanted to get the right run personnel out there, and I'm disappointed, first of all, that we were robbed of history and the tie that we all wanted, and I'm secondly disappointed that this was the best game, and we're going to talk about the timeout all day because of the reaction from the announcers during the game, which I thought didn't fit the reaction that was right for the game, instead of talking about all the other amazing things we saw.
Tell us how you really feel. Israel Gutierrez, Brandon Staley called that timeout. Did that end the Chargers' hopes of going to the playoffs?
Look, everything that was happening in that moment, right, where you've got the clock ticking down, you've got a third and fourth situation, you've got an interim head coach who hasn't been there before, you've got a team in the Raiders who haven't been there before, who know, at worst, they're in. And it doesn't matter who they're playing, they can sell to their fans, they can sell to everybody. We got into the playoffs after this somewhat of a disastrous season, okay? Derek Carr said it right after the game. He said, absolutely, it changed their mindset, okay? That's without time to think about it, that's right after the game. So yes, you let that play out. You got to the third and four with a couple of run plays with that same personnel. You would be, tell your middle linebacker, hey, watch for that run. They're probably going to run it again. If they do, we can stop them and maybe get this four. Do whatever you have to do. Don't give anybody more time to think about it and sit there and think about it, or give them a better personnel grouping to run with as well. I thought it was a terrible decision.
So Isola and Gutierrez seem to think Staley's timeout killed the Chargers' playoff chances. Yates, how about you?
I don't think you can add up the timeout to anything more than execution in the moment. But what he said was he was trying to make sure that the kick was the longest possible. And for a young head coach, after a game like that in which he had to make so many different decisions, I can understand what happened here. He panicked. It goes on. He didn't like the personnel he had out there. He called a timeout because he wanted to get something different. And that is the difference between experience and not when it comes to the NFL. I don't think it was the right move, but I don't think it lost him that game. If I'm going to go back to other moves, going forward on fourth down when you were in your own territory that resulted in a Raiders field goal, that to me was not smart in that particular situation. But overall, no, it's not all
no
about
one,
timeout.
Frank, it's not on the Chargers' defense to stop Jacobs from getting the chunk of yards.
Absolutely,
that he
and they had done that. And that's why I think the idea that they're trying to avoid the Kansas City Chiefs, football players are not wired that way. And if they, why would they be so conservative on first and second down? If they're looking to gain yardage to guarantee themselves to get a field goal, I'm not buying that at all. They were ready to kill the game in that moment.
You can't argue that the Chargers' defense was effective in stopping the first two runs and then alternately at the same time argue that they weren't trying on those first two runs to advance the ball, because the Chargers still had to stop them on that next run, which they couldn't and didn't, which is why the game changed, not because of the timeout.
Is it possible we all wanted a tie so bad that we're allowing the idea that they were going to kneel out, they didn't really want to win, to color our view of it, Clinton Yates?
That's exactly what I was going to say. There's no scenario in which I want a head coach in which they're assuming the other team is not trying to win at all times. That's why I think this was ultimately just a snap decision.
But I've seen many tweet this, and many Ochos out there, and many football analysts who look at the full 22s and everything, that who they brought into the game was just one linebacker, Chargers, in that instance. They actually removed the linebacker, brought in a safety who was then not as effective stopping the run. Either way, then that's on Brandon Staley as well. I mean, you could do a 30 for 30 on this game on Brandon Staley's decisions, which had, Clinton, you brought up the fourth down decision at your own 18, which has enormous butterfly wings throughout it all, but then the greatest fourth down game in the last 40 years of football that Herbert had in the end of the fourth quarter in the overtime session as well. And you can do a 30 for 30 on the Raiders season, how they put it together with everything they were up against. That's how Las Vegas gets into the playoffs, how the Steelers got in, and how Indianapolis, with everything to play for, lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's talk about this a little bit, all right? The biggest egg in how long? They had a chance to beat the worst team in football and control their own destiny. Instead, the team that had fans dressing up as clowns to clown their ownership actually clowned the Colts through it all and won the game and still got the number one playoff pick. Unbelievable day for Jacksonville. But how this got away from Indianapolis Colts, who end the season with a better point differential than the 2-1 seeds, better than the Packers and better than the Titans, and they're out of the playoffs. Clinton, how did Indianapolis let this happen? What should the punishment be? Is it on Carson Wentz?
I'll be quite frank about this. If I'm thinking about what I want in leadership for a team, this is a fireable offense. The Colts haven't beaten the Jags on the road since 2015. The experiment with Wentz has not worked. They're 0-7 in that time, while the rest of the league is miles ahead of them. I mean, you can't lose this game. You couldn't lose the previous game to the Raiders as well. They don't execute in the good times. I mean, I don't want to take somebody's job, but if I'm looking at why coaches are getting fired for all sorts of other reasons around the league, performance in Jacksonville is a good reason to get rid of somebody because they just can't get it done.
You want to be Frank? Let's go to Frank. Frank Isola, how did Indianapolis let this happen?
Yeah, it's how they started, how they finished. 0-3 to start the season, 0-2. All they had to do was win one of the final two games. And you have a Jacksonville team who put up a season-high 26 points. They gave up 50 the week before to New England, and you can only put up 11. Let's give Trevor Lawrence a little bit of credit there. But obviously, the head coach and the quarterback, this one's going to sting for them all offseason.
You believe that's a pairing that doesn't get next season after the way this ended, Frank?
No, I'm not ready to pull the plug just yet. They brought Carson Wentz. Frank Reich and he worked together in Philadelphia. I'm ready to give it one more year.
Israel Gutierrez.
in retrospect, this maybe isn't quite as shocking. As Clinton mentioned, they haven't won in Jacksonville, or the one time in London against Jacksonville. But look at the picture of what this team is. Okay, they're 0-7 in the games that Taylor didn't run for 100 yards. Carson Wentz, in only two of his last eight games, threw for more than 200 yards. This offensive line gave up six sacks in this must-win game. Like, they're a one-man team this year, it felt like, and they probably didn't deserve to be in the playoffs.
Yep. By point differential, right. I repeat, Sarah Spain, they're better than the 2-1 seeds going into the playoffs. How did this happen?
Well, after a terrible start, they got super hot to the point that they had a 98% chance of making the postseason if they just won one of those last two games. So heading into the last two, they were all but in. And it's not just that they lost to Jacksonville, who are terrible and had a stadium full of clown faces. It's that they had a season low in yards, a season low in points. Jacksonville has the worst sack rate in the league, and they gave up six sacks to Carson Wentz in that game. They already have Frank Reich and Chris Ballard signed through 2026. So if you want accountability at the highest levels, it ain't going to happen unless they decide to go against those contracts. And they eat $15 million in dead cap space if they get rid of Wentz. It does free up $13 million. So they can make that decision if they want, but it's going to be
hard to
move
on as quickly as you would think. The cap space you just talked about, knowing, well,
yeah,
Philadelphia made the playoffs without Wentz and has all the picks now.
I agree with Izzy. This was so much about Jonathan Taylor, and I don't think Wentz is the guy to pin your hopes on. You have a good team. You got to move on from Wentz to make
it. How the Raiders got in the playoffs, how the Steelers got in the playoffs, how the San Francisco 49ers got in the playoffs. Down 17-0 to the Rams, who needed the win for the two seed. A comeback, a shocker. Garoppolo huge down the stretch. That drive in regulation was 88 yards in 61 seconds. A walk-off pick on the Stafford Huck. Sarah, did this tell you more about the Niners or Rams?
Oh, this was so perfect for this last day of great historic games, because the Niners were 0-40 in games before this, 17 or more points down, and McVay, of course, 45-0 when leading at the half before this game. So we have all this historic things. We learned about both of them. I think the biggest concern is about the Rams heading into the postseason because of your questions about Matt Stafford and that defense. We can criticize Matt Stafford for that last pick, but since 2011, he has more fourth quarter comebacks than pretty much anyone. He has been clutch before, but this season, 17 interceptions, that one down the stretch there. I think it's more of a through line for the Niners that we've seen in the recent weeks, whereas the Rams are keep going up and down, which makes you really unsure of what you're getting in the postseason.
Yeah, I think Sarah's onto something there. The consistency of the Rams hasn't been there at all, and so there's not a big surprise when it comes to it, even though they did overcome a big deficit. But this also tells me Kyle Shanahan, again, has McVay's number in a way that almost no other coach does. He calls him a sort of little brother, but in these kind of games, again, the leadership, we talked about it in the Chargers game as well, when it comes down to late decisions, guys who know what they're doing do better. Garoppolo played well. I think for the Rams to lose this game at home going into the playoffs, not good, yo. This is not a good situation.
All right, guys. Sola.
Well, the offensive line, defensive line of San Francisco, outstanding. Deebo Samuel was incredible. And let's say something for the quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, who I call the handsome pinata. This guy gets beaten up a lot. He went into that game injured. And I love Aaron Donald, but I hear so much talk from that Rams defense. When they had a chance to end the game, no timeouts for San Francisco, Garoppolo marched right down the field. He went right through them, like you mentioned, Tony, 61 seconds to tie the game up right
there. Israel Gutierrez.
Yeah, Frank, and I'm just going to double down on that and put some of that on that LA Rams staff, the defensive staff. They have the players. They have the ability to make life uncomfortable for the opposing quarterbacks, and they just don't seem to do it enough. And then this one, Jimmy G got more comfortable as the game goes on, not to mention the players that the 49ers were missing. It's very frustrating when you see a team like the Rams have all this talent and not play to it. It does speak
maybe
to
the maybe San Francisco a little dangerous going into that matchup with Dallas. I'll give Sarah Spain the last word here.
Yeah, he mentioned, Clinton did, it was an away game for the Niners, but there was so much red in there that Stafford was having to go silent count at home, which is an embarrassment.
Coming up.
Something to think about as well.
Never trust a big nick and a smile. It's rat poison.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guarantee Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome back to Around the Horn, brought to you by Chase. Coming to you from the Seaport District at Pier 17.
It's amazing after the 24 hours we had yesterday. Alabama, Georgia. Saban versus Smart. Rat poison versus regular. Run-of-the-mill poison. In the history of national championship games, there's been one rematch in the BCS playoff era. Alabama LSU in 2011. LSU won the first one, Alabama won the second one. So the loser came back there, and in four rematches of top five teams, you know, the loser came back and won all those games too in the kind of BCS area or pre-BCS era. So this is something we've seen before, also a rematch. We saw Alabama-Georgia just a few years ago with two SEC teams. Alabama and how they own Georgia, and that matchup from just a month ago. Clinton Yates, start us off. How much does that play into today's matchup? And what's the one thing that decides tonight?
It plays into it a lot, but I'm not in the business of picking against Saban and Alabama in championship situations. I think what's going to decide this game is the composure of Stetson Bennett. He's a former walk-on JUCO kid. I mean, this is a huge actual game, simply from a largeness standpoint of the moment. If this kid can keep it together and keep the turnovers down, Georgia's got a pretty good shot against the Juggernauts.
Georgia's got a pretty good shot, but you're not making a pick
I don't
there.
Think they're going to win. I'll take Bama all day.
After everything you just said, Sarah Spain, how about you?
Yeah, you know, in this matchup, Georgia has actually been tied or leading 71% of the time in their last four meetings with Bama. They just can't finish. Tonight, they will, and the difference is going to be the blitz and deception at the line. They didn't really show Bama anything different in the SEC Championship because they didn't have much on the line. They were going to make it in anyway. Now they changed that. They also only blitz 33% of the time in that 24-point quarter for Bama, 54% the rest of the game. They're going to go hard after Bryce Young, and that's going to be the difference.
Incredible stats to pick Georgia for Sarah Spain, but I do recall you saying I will never pick against Nick Saban in a national title game scenario.
No, I didn't say that. I said I'm considering adding that rule, but I haven't added it yet. I'm just considering it.
Go ahead, Israel Gutierrez.
Well, I, like Clint, initially thought it was more on Stetson Bennett. He didn't have a great SEC championship game. He could play better, and Georgia could, you know, end up victorious here. But after reading Andy Staples, fellow Gator of The Athletic, it made me realize that Georgia's defense just didn't play like Georgia's defense. And that first touchdown Alabama got was a busted coverage, a big play right before the end of the half, also another Georgia busted coverage here. If that Georgia defense just plays more like itself with some adjustments, because Nick Saban can see this coming if you just play the same way you've been playing all season long, some adjustments, yeah, I think Georgia will look like the defense that dominated all season long. And yes, I'm picking them again to win. Rat point.
All right. So that's two for Georgia now. And one panelist who talked about Georgia the entire answer was picking Bama. And Frank Isola, how about you?
The scary thing is Alabama is supposed to be even better next season if that's somehow possible. You know, in the first meeting, Bryce Young threw for over 400 yards. He had three TDs against that very good defense. Here was the thing. Georgia, when they blitzed Young, he was only 8 for 20. So if they can get after him, maybe they can throw him up his game a little bit. But in these games, I'm taking the Heisman Trophy winner and the better coach. I have Alabama.
All right, so we are split here. But again, I think most of the time we spent talking about Georgia. Very interesting. That is rat poison then. We'll move on. NFL teams moving on from coaches today. Not the one whose quarterback sneaked on 3rd and 9 from their own 4. Not them, but one who had a 7-game winning streak this year and finished with a winning record. So Mike Zimmer in Minnesota, Vic Fangio in Denver, Matt Nagy in Chicago. I think you were all prepared for that. But Miami firing Brian Flores today. No one saw this coming. Israel, you're in Miami. Buy or sell the Dolphins' decision to move on from Flores.
I mean, it's a hard sell. I just talked about earlier about Sean McVay not making his defense better or that defensive staff. Look, they got the best out of that defense while Brian Flores was there. It looked great and probably maximized their talent overall. If you want to argue he's more defensive coordinator than head coach, that's fine, but his record and everything he's done so far isn't enough of a reason for him to be fired. The only possible reason is the relationship between him and Tua not being great, and maybe the owner, Stephen Ross, is sold on Tua as a franchise quarterback, but Brian Flores was perhaps involved in trying to get Deshaun Watson into town, therefore their relationship fractured. That would be the best guess, the only real reason why they should have.
You think this is just as much Flores wanting out as Ross wanting to move on?
No, I think it's just a miscommunication between him and the quarterback, and just not a very good relationship, and Flores sort of being out of luck.
Frank Isola.
Now, Brian Flores' record after three seasons was just about where Tony Sperano was, Joe Philbin, Adam Gase. He was trending in an upward direction. Clearly, this is above him. This is ownership and management disconnected with the head coach. I think he was connected with the players in his locker room, but I think ownership and the GM, I think they have unrealistic expectations. They picked the quarterback when they could have picked Justin Herbert, so they made the wrong move here.
Lynn Yates.
Yeah, it's particularly disappointing because, again, as a brother, this guy is in a position where he's always looked at as the excuse as to why something didn't happen. And the question with black head coaches in this league is not about the first chance. It's about whether or not they get a second chance. He's a good enough coach, and I think that he will, but ultimately that's why this is just a bad look. It seems like there's always a reason why you got to get rid of that guy as opposed to somebody else and keeping him around. I don't like
it. Tyra Spain.
Yeah, since Stephen Ross took over, there have been three winning seasons. He accounted for two of them. They were back-to-back. He was also 4-2 against Belichick. This is a guy that needed to be given more time to continue succeeding. This is unfathomable and doesn't make any sense unless what Izzy's saying is right, which is that he was pushing for someone like Deshaun and Ross wanted to go with Tua.
Look at those scores today. Clint Yates, Frank Isola. Thank you for the time. Sarah Spain, Israel Gutierrez.
Later.
Showdown, 2 minutes.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Klay Thompson may be the most beloved player in the NBA. The emotion of the return last night and the hops on that dunk. 941 days away from the game, multiple injuries. He had 17 points in 20 minutes. Seeing it play out like it did, Sarah, what's the takeaway?
The takeaway is that anyone who complained about the Warriors for changing the game or being too dominant or the inevitability of them being in the finals was wrong, because the NBA is better when the Splash Brothers are playing together. It's better when the Warriors are good.
Israel?
Yeah, you don't know what you got till it's gone, and everybody loves Klay so much. It's because he just shows his true, genuine nature at all times, whether it be, you know, blowing dunks on promotional tours, you know, internationally, or just telling you how much he hurt when he didn't make the top 75 list. Just, he feels like it's a friend that
so
you're watching
play
basketball.
You would call him the most beloved player a friend. He feels like, it was the friends we made along the way. I saw him on a boat once. How does he do it? Klay was on a boat. People love him. Points. Gutierrez 2-1. We'll move on. Grizzlies over the Lakers last night, and you know what we're talking about here. Ja Morant's block. I mean, let's just keep on looking at this. This may be the most explosive small man you've ever seen in the NBA. The most explosive athlete on the planet. Israel, answer this. This is the best block you've seen since when?
For me, aesthetically speaking strictly, is since LaPhonso Ellis of the Denver Nugget went up and grabbed it with one hand and brought it down.
Oh, I love that one.
But yes, they're probably right there side by side, those two, because him hitting his head on the rim is the perfect kicker. I'm sorry, in the backboard, perfect
I'm
kicker.
I'm so sorry. I can't answer this because it's a wrong question. That's not a block. That's an interception. That was not block. That was an interception. So I guess the best one since the Rams ended the game against the Niners.
Israel Gutierrez. Wayback machine with LaPhonso Ellis. Point game FaceTime video.
Thank you. And, you know, one of the most amazing things that happened this weekend that kind of got buried by all the football is a Miami Heat team playing without Jimmy Butler and without Bam Adebayo, without five total rotation players, went into Phoenix, the team with the best record in the NBA, and won by 23 points with guys like Omer Yurtseven consistently contributing, with guys like Max Strus contributing. Eric Spoelstra, coach of the year as of right now. Congratulations.
Come on.
Boy, the Miami.
Oh. Billy Donovan.
I also noticed you didn't pick LeBron.
Yes, it's the culture.
Is it the culture?
Number one, boy.
Maybe in finals.
Come back, baby.
We'll see you tomorrow.